Let's start where we left off last week, which is the iPhone smart battery case for the iPhone XR through XS Max came out. And where we were last week, Mio, is we had ordered these, but they weren't out yet. And now we both had them in our hands. So you go first. What's your experience been with this thing in person?
Yeah, it's interesting because I've never even used a battery case before, let alone like owned one. And they call it smart battery case, and it's smarter than any other battery case you can buy on the market, like from third parties. But it's not, it doesn't really take advantage of what it can go. It doesn't go to the full extent of where it could go. And it is fun. If you want a battery case for your phone, for your iPhone XS, XR, XS Max, and iPhone X, yeah, it works with iPhone X fine, then I'd definitely get this one. But in terms of like the potential of the product, there's areas and opportunities that they don't take up on, I think. Like when the battery case is plugged in and so your battery case has got charge and your phone's charging up. Well, in the top right corner, you just see the charging icon forever. And it knows that the smart battery case is powering it. But obviously the way it works is it charges the phone, which charges the thing. But to me, that's not very smart. Like, I was kind of hoping it'd be more like low power mode, where you could have, where it would almost show you like a separate state for, oh, you're in the smart battery case mode state.
Right.
And then if you like expand the control center, it could break it out there. But instead, it just treats it as you're constantly plugged in. And there's like the aesthetic annoyance of, oh, this icon's always in the corner, because it's almost like a static indicator until your battery case goes all the way down to 0% and then finally reverts to the, you know, 0 to 100
and
of the
you
iPhone's battery.
Get this big thick case on without a reason at that moment.
Yeah, then you have, oh, now the wait even feels more annoying because it's not even doing anything right now. But like in the battery settings menu, if you go into settings, battery, they now, since iOS 12, have these graphs that show you your percentage of your battery over time. And normally they work pretty cool, and you can see where the battery went down. But with a smart battery case on, those graphs will just be 100% for the entire duration of the battery case being plugged in. And, you know, it's the Apple case. I knew it didn't do this, but I almost like expected it anyway. Because that screen should be smarter, and it should break out the battery case of the battery life of the case versus the battery case of the phone. Like in on that screen, if you go into low power mode, it can mark on the battery graph the low power mode region. Like you spent this many hours in low power mode before you turned it off. I kind of want it to do that for the smart battery case. Similarly, if you're on the lock screen, the lock screen interface to show you the smart battery case charge status, that double battery UI that they advertise, obviously, like you see it on the lock screen, that only happens when you plug in or disconnect the case for the first time.
Right.
Like, whilst the case is in and you're just going around your day, those two battery never show up on the lock screen. All you see is the 100% charged label, which is describing the iPhone's battery, which is what you get, you know, if you're not using the case normally. But the special UI where you have the two batteries side by side, one representing the case and one representing the phone, that only shows up, you know, like the 0.01% of your day when you first plug in the phone. After that, you always have to go to the battery widget in the today view, which is a pain and nobody wants to swipe there. It's like, why doesn't it always show you the battery case percentage where it says 100% charged for, you know, 10 hours whilst the battery case depletes? Why does iOS not say there, battery case 80%, battery case 50%? And then when the battery case runs out, you can say 100% charge, 80% charge of the actual phone battery. Mm-hmm. It's weird, like, edge cases of that, where, yes, it is the smartest battery case you can buy, but it doesn't fulfill the potential that they could have from it, from Apple knowing and giving it the privileged status it does in iOS.
Yeah, I wouldn't want the double battery all the time, but I would like to see it, like, whenever you first turn on your phone, like, just wake it up to see it, and then have it kind of fade. But then always in Control Center, have a double battery there. Like, you, like, I think in your post, you showed how they use dual SIM, and it's just stacked, like, one carrier over the other, and you'd have the same thing with your battery. Like, that makes perfect sense. And the chart thing I found useful in my case, because I was testing how long could go on my iPhone with 100% charge plus the battery case. Like, could I get through 24 hours, for example, which I couldn't do otherwise. And I was able to, the case had battery before I went to bed, and it was dead when I woke up, and the iPhone had used like 24% of its battery, or something like that, and or 22% of its battery. And I could look at the smart the battery chart to see, oh, the case died around 2 a.m. So that's how long the case ran, was from 4 p.m. to 2 a.m. because it showed us charging the whole time in that chart, which like, you know, you're right. They should do an update to that chart to make it say battery case is the provider there.
Yeah, and the line would then, you'd almost have two lines, like one line represents the case battery and one line represents the phone battery.
Yeah, and it's kind of edge case. It's like the chart seems like, you know, that the chart was made during the iOS 11 update cycle because of a specific, you know, reason. The whole battery replacement issue, it was to dissatisfy people who want to know the health of their battery and how they're
yeah, the chart was added in 12.0.
yeah, which the battery case already existed, but not for the new iPhones at the time. And so, and now there's a new battery case. When they get time, they should go back and revisit that chart. But the UI of, like, the battery is just charging until the case is dead, I think that's lame. And they should, and then, you know, put the battery status in Control Center, if nowhere else, besides the battery widget, which not everyone knows to use anyway.
Yeah, and I hate the battery widget anyway. It's ugly. Yeah. It's, like, I'd much rather see those two batteries on the lock screen, which you, the ones that you get a glimpse of for, like, once a day.
Yeah.
If they just flashed them there and then they disappeared and just went to your normal lock screen.
Yeah, yeah. Just flash.
That'd be so much better. Yeah. And the Control Center thing is, like, my number one complaint, because it's like, with dual SIM, they have a stacked thing, whereas you show the carrier one, then you show carrier two below. Yeah. And that's on the left-hand side. On the right-hand side, they have a battery. You know what goes right under there? The battery of the case. Like, yeah. It just seems like a logical place to do it. And I don't think there's any reason why they wouldn't do it other than they just haven't got around to doing it. So, and when, but when you're charging, you know, the premiums you are for the Apple case, which is quote unquote the smart case, you know, I don't think it's unreasonable to expect those areas to be, you know, finished.
Right, right. So for me and my testing, like I said, I went from 4 p.m. at 100%. The case was fully charged. The iPhone was fully charged. And I just used it like I normally would. And this was after work hours. So I wasn't just like at my desk plugged in. And I intentionally didn't plug it in when I was in the car and out and about or that night. And so the case ran from 4 p.m. to around 1 or 2 a.m. And then the iPhone 24 hours later was at like 18% battery, and I didn't like all the way dead. Like, I, you know, needed my phone to be charged after that point in time. So, like, then I started charging it, but I would have gotten like maybe 26 hours or so, I'd say, which is pretty impressive. You know, as with all this stuff, like the battery case, if I were to need one and use one, this is the one I would want, just because of, like, I think the way it's made is really nice. And I was reading on, like, I saw on Reddit, people are asking, does anyone know of battery cases besides the smart battery case from Apple that works with CarPlay? And the thing is there, like, many battery cases cover up the Lightning port, and then they have like a micro USB port or a USB-C port that charges the battery case. And then the Lightning port is like, you know, obscured. There are some, like Mophie's got one. Mophie had like kind of like a subtweet of the smart battery case from Apple where it was like access to the Lightning port and you can charge the case. And it was like, and wireless charging, like, you know, just say like, hey, look at us. We, you know, we're here too. We're here first. And like, so that one you can literally plug into the Lightning port on the iPhone and like use CarPlay. But for the ones that don't, that cover up the Lightning port, then I guess you couldn't use CarPlay that way. Like with the battery case, it would just be like, take it off or have wireless CarPlay or use Bluetooth and not CarPlay. So it's so like the smart battery case, obviously it's the Lightning port. It's Apple, so it just, you know, plug it in and it works. So that's kind of neat.
Yeah, and it's full Lightning pass through. So any Lightning accessory, whether it's keyboards, microphones, if you plug it into the battery case, it will get sent through to the phone. So it's not just, you know, some weird data connection or just power only. It's literally any Lightning accessory will work through the case. It just passes it straight on.
And then in terms of the design, like, so you've got, you had the, you have the iPhone XS version for your iPhone X, and that works for you. But my understanding is that you still found the case to be like bulky or bulkier than you'd want to use every day. Is that right?
Yeah. It's too heavy. That's my problem. Okay. Like, the thickness I can deal with, right? Like, it is thicker. And I even tweeted, like, it's not that much thicker, which is probably a misspeaking, because yes, it is significantly thicker, but it's like, that's what I don't notice. Right. You know, when I pick it up in the case, like, the thickness, I could deal with that being the disadvantage, but the additional weight is problematic for me. It's so heavy that even in times when I'd be in situations where I was like, you know, I really need more battery, because obviously we spoke last week about, you know, the home office kind of work-life balance means
it's
we don't
by
need,
power, right?
Yeah, we're not the, you know, number one target market for these cases anyway. But even imagining if I was going out for the day, like, the additional weight of the case is so annoying. Like, every time I pick it up, or I play Crossy Road a lot, just mindlessly, and I hold that with my phone in landscape, and I just do it one-handed with my thumb swiping around left, right, up and down.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fun game. But with the battery case on, there's so much weight, and it's not just centered, because obviously the battery pack is on one edge, so it just pulls down the whole side of the phone. It made it really uncomfortable, and I don't think I could ever get used to that. If I was going around and about, I'd rather just have like a battery pack in my bag that I plug into at lunchtime. Like, the carrying around the phone in the case all day long, and then after the 8 hours or so, the battery case being at zero, and then still having to carry the weight around even though it's not doing anything for the rest of the time, it just feels rough.
Yeah, for me, I was using this for the iPhone XS Max, and so it's even bigger and even heavier. And I mentioned the show last week that I planned to buy it, and then before it even arrived, I figured I'm going to return this thing because I don't need it, and it's a lot of money, and I'm not going to keep this phone when the new phones come out in the fall. I want a smaller screen phone, and so I did return it since like the day I tested it. But it putting it on, it was like, this is really like honking heavy and thick and big, and it really was like, it wasn't a problem to like, you know, put it in my jeans pocket and like go out to dinner and you know, go out and about and have it, but it was heavy. Like it felt like when I worked at the Apple store and there were like iPhone 5s or iPhone 4s or whatever at the time, like in these big battery cases that could read credit cards too and like swipe credit cards. You know, the whole point of those is like they're on this big other system to make them like portable terminals. But this is just the battery case, and it felt like that, like a big point of sale scanner kind of thing. But it was my phone.
It almost feels so heavy that it should have something else in there.
Like, yeah.
Like, it doesn't justify just as a battery. It's like, is this like a storage zone? Can you like pop out in a SD card slot? you know what I mean?
It is very durable. I mean, it keeps the back of your phone from like touching the back of the table surface or whatever. But and I mix on like the design of the whole thing. I think it's very neat and impressive how they designed the bottom of it. Like, it does cover the bottom of your phone, but it's like as minimal as the top of the case is, in that there's no chin. And your hands-on review has like a good like photo comparison of the old design, which the iPhone had a bezel, and then the case itself had a big chin too. And in this one, in this design, there's almost no chin, and they put the lightning port like toward the back so that it plugs in, and you know, the battery's back there, the lightning port kind of goes back there, and it's like, it's pretty impressive how they've done it. But I also think that, you know, having never owned the original Smart Battery case, I'm kind of envious of its design, because you feel in the bottom of your hand how thin the phone actually is, like at a case level. Whereas this one, like the whole bottom of it is the same thickness, and it's like, it's just a really big phone, like a big brick. So where the other one, like, you know, got made fun of visually, and then this one goes all the way to the bottom so that it, you know, you've got more battery than you would otherwise, and you probably need it with the way that the camera is designed and the wireless charging features are inside. I think I, if given the choice, would prefer, you know, if like you didn't have to lose battery life as part of the trade, the original design plus the no chin on this one, like I think that'd be a neat combo. But as it is, it is a very thick case for the XS Max, and not for me. But maybe I'll revisit it if these cases work with the next versions of the iPhone that are smaller, because I know I know I want to go back to the small phones, and that was the biggest factor for me not keeping it was that. But I did think it was neat.
I mean, I'm on the smallest phone that you can get, and it still feels really bulky and heavy.
Yeah, it's all relative. I did think it was neat that you can, I mean, and of course you can, wirelessly charge the case without the iPhone in it. Like, you can plug up and charge it, and you still have the light, you know, LED light indicate that it's charging, but it also works with just a cheap ad. You put your phone on a wireless charger, and the case, or the case on the charger, no phone inside, and you can see the light, you know, indicate that it's charging. So,
which you have to do when you get out of the box, because it doesn't come with any charge whatsoever, which is unlike, you know, any other Apple device I've ever owned, I think.
Yeah, I'm curious.
You get out of the box and it has 0% battery, so you've got to plug it in.
That's great. It's like 100% of the people who bought them around the world. I'm curious if people that buy them from an Apple store, if they have the same experience, and that they're probably in stores.
I think someone, it appears to be for legal reasons rather than, you know, Apple just being stingy and not charging the batteries up. Probably because they shipped them by sea or something, so they have to be drained and there's weird ramifications. Like, I think even on your box you had this massive label on it that was like, can't ship by air, or, you know.
Yeah, it said you can't ship on a passenger plane, which is a cargo plane only. So it indicated that it could come from air. And I think on Apple's website, like John Gruber kept pointing out that it mentioned by sea only or something. And my box indicated that, you know, there was a cargo plane involved. So I don't know.
But yeah, but what, if this was mainly, it's annoying, but I was upset until I kind of realized there was actually a reason behind it and not just Apple, you know, missing out on a cool detail. Because if they started shipping like iPhones with 0% battery, I'd be like really annoyed.
Everyone's guessing that it's something legal, but does this affect Mophie batteries too? Like Mophie battery cases too?
I don't know. I've never owned a battery case. That's the problem.
I haven't bought one recently. Like, I've reviewed, or I've received like review units that come charged, and but I've not purchased one recently. But I've had experience that they come empty, and so my guess is, you know, maybe that these things were made a while ago and only released now for some reason. Maybe it's iOS. You know, took this off. You know, you needed iOS 12.1 for this to work.
They'd have to be made a long, long time ago though for the battery to deplete to zero, like when they're not on.
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe it was
like, it'd have to be like years for it to go to zero. Yeah. I could see it being like at, you know, 40 rather than 70, but to go to nothing, and when they're probably, you know, manufactured in what, like November time maybe? It seems
I'm just not convinced yet that it's some legal reason that they couldn't do it yet. And everyone had the same guess, which is, you know, maybe you can't. But no one said like, look, here's the reason, like here's the you know, the law or whatever.
Yeah, no one pointed it out explicitly. Yeah.
Like, everyone has,
I'd love to get
record.
A resolution on that, because there's a big difference between Apple not doing it because they couldn't be bothered or they didn't want to pay the extra cent to charge them up, versus Apple couldn't do it for an actual, you know, reason that they can't change.
Yeah.
So I'd like to know the answer to that at some point.
And if you haven't tried one of these yet, check out youtube.com/95Mac. Jeff Benjamin has his hands-on video review of the version for the XS Max that you can see, and they all look, you know, kind of the same, so...
Yeah, and just to summarize, I kind of went in knowing that, you know, this wasn't really for me, but I wanted to get experience with the battery case and see maybe even if I was going on, you know, travel and stuff, whether I'd opt to use it then. And on reflection, I probably would recommend people not to buy them and just buy, you know, portable battery packs that you can put in your bag or you can put in your purse and carry them around with you, or just leave them in the car and, you know, charge when you need, and they can hold way more capacity than a battery case can anyway, and they can charge more than just your phone. So there's a lot of flexibility, and they're cheaper. So
to me, it comes down to if you're going to use the same phone for years. Like, if you are, then there is convenience in having it built into your case. Like, because I've been in situations where I'm like walking around a big city with my backpack and a big battery in there, and then like a lightning cable going from my backpack to my pocket where my phone is. It's like a sign that there's, you know, like grab this cord, and it's kind of nerve-wracking in that way, whereas like the case being built in, there's convenience there. But
yeah, if you need the battery every single day of your life, like the battery case makes sense because it's way more convenient than plugging in a battery, external battery, every single time. However, I'd be surprised at how many people actually need one, especially in the light of like the iPhone XR. Like, if you're on an older iPhone and struggling with battery life, and you haven't really experienced like iPhone XR, you know, even XS Max level battery life, it's way longer than the older phones were. Like, incredibly longer. Like, way it outstrips the 10S and the 10 by miles. Mm-hmm. Even it's better than what the numbers say. So it's like you have to be. If you haven't already bought a phone, then you should consider the 10R first before saying, like, I'd buy it. If battery life was really important to me, I'd definitely recommend people get a 10R rather than a 10S plus a battery case, because the trade-offs are just, you know, it doesn't compare.
Yeah. Over the weekend, my brother-in-law was asking me about battery case recommendations for the iPhone 8 Plus. His work, or I guess it's his personal iPhone 8 Plus, but he has to use it for work at his job. And the battery is just like depleted. I don't know what the health of it was, but he says it doesn't hold a charge for nearly as long. And he's had it since launch, so, you know, a little bit over a year now, I guess, and heavy usage. And I said, you know, the best thing to do would be to make an appointment at the Apple Store and have the battery replaced. You might end up spending less than you would for a new battery, and then you've actually got a, you know, the battery inside is built in is better without having a big bulky case, because that you're going to need to charge, and the battery will only get worse. That's an idea, is that I think a lot of people that have, like, the battery degrades, like, the case can help with that, but then it's also that, you know, as the battery gets worse, the case is going to work more too, and, you know, you're just kind of putting off the inevitable, which is replace the battery in the phone, which is a thing now we all know about. So
yeah, the smart battery case is kind of like a nice final resort, but I definitely explore every other choice you have before opting for the battery case.
Last thing on battery cases is, years ago I had a review Mophie battery case that I think was called the Space Pack, and the idea there was it was a battery case for, like, the iPhone 5 era. But it also had internal storage, which, you know, you mentioned that this case, for the size, you feel like it should do more. That was a thing at one point. Of course, external storage was limited to, like, Mophie's Space Pack app, and then that can only do things like, you know, show you, save photos and you know, store files for, like, access between computers and stuff like that. But that was a thing, was that you could add storage sort of to your device using a battery pack. That was super thick.
Yeah, and there's even been battery packs which have, like, add the headphone jack back and stuff. Like, and I don't really expect Apple to do any of that stuff. It was just the comparison of, you know, the weight to what you actually get for the weight. But there are definitely third parties that have some very esoteric and random selection of things you can get that also have batteries attached to them.
This week, 95Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by LinkedIn Jobs. The right hire can make a huge impact on your business. At 9to5Mac, we're a small team, so one bad hire can throw a wrench in everyone's workflow. On the flip side, hiring the right person, which isn't always easy, has positive effects for the whole team. That's why it's so important to find the right person. But where do you find that individual? You can post a job on a job board and hope you find the right person. But think about it. How often do you hang out on job boards? Don't leave finding someone great to chance when you can post your job to a place where people go every day to make connections, grow in their career, and discover job opportunities. LinkedIn. Most LinkedIn members haven't recently visited the top job boards, but 9 out of 10 members are open to new opportunities. And with 70% of the U.S. workforce on LinkedIn, posting on LinkedIn is the best way to get your job opportunity in front of more of the right people. People who are qualified for your role and ready for something new. It's the best way to find the person who will help you grow your business. And why a new hire is made every 10 seconds using LinkedIn. Hurry to linkedin.com/happyhour and get $50 off your first job post. That's linkedin.com/happyhour to get $50 off your first job post. linkedin.com/happyhour. Terms and conditions apply. Our thanks to LinkedIn Jobs for sponsoring 9to5 Mac Happy Hour.
This week, Apple released a bunch of the software updates that were in beta over the last few weeks that weren't very exciting betas. So I'm not even going to look at the version numbers, but there are new versions of iOS, of the HomePod OS, and then updates for the Apple Watch, Apple TV, and Mac. And they're all bug fixes. Like, you're not going to get new features from these. But as of this week, every beta version that was a developer, a public beta, is now the released version, and there's no betas that we're using for the next day or so. And what's interesting to me here is that maybe we see like iOS 12.2 in beta soon, and you know, new betas with features that are coming, because these were, you know, obviously point updates, and so, you know, they are as advertised bug fix updates. And maybe we'll either go for a season without betas, which would be kind of neat, or we'll get some cold new betas with new features. What do you think?
We'll probably be on betas in not too long a time.
Monday.
Yeah, or you know, in early February or something, because we'll be coming up on some kind of product revision, you know, whether it's iPads or whatever else. And generally, Apple has software updates that go alongside them, even if it's just device compatibility and bug fixes for everything else. So at the most, we're going to, at maximum, I think we'd have like a month off, but you know what beta life's like. It never ends.
Yeah, exactly. Also this week, we got a lot of Apple Pay news, and this is more about the US, because where wireless payments are everywhere outside of the US, and Apple Pay was like mostly US first and then it expands around the world. Accepting wireless payments is not everywhere in the US. So this week, Apple announced that Target will finally accept Apple Pay later this year. And they've also mentioned Taco Bell and Jack in the Box and a service station called Hy-Vee and some more places. But between Target and Taco Bell and a few others, they said that they're now covering 74 out of the top 100 US merchants. And I think like 65% of where you can, you know, spend money in the US. So it's getting better. The big holdout there obviously is Walmart and 25 other merchants that must rank high. But Target was interesting because they were notorious for like bad financial security, where they would promote in stores, their cashiers were required to say, did you know you can save, you know, 5% or so if you use a check to pay? And this is way after checks have been used regularly in the US. And it was just weird to have your cashier be required to ask you if you want to write a check for your, you know, payment. And the whole reason for that was they had a big hack, like at least one major hack, and they wanted to use checks as a fallback from credit cards. And, The other thing that they have is they have a Target Red Card, which when you use that, you can save 5% on all your purchases for the store. And I think that the trade there is that they see what you purchase, like item by item versus just like an amount. That's instead of saying someone bought these items from our store, they say that you bought these items from our store and they know information about you from the credit card. And that's the trade, is 5% of savings, which is not nothing.
5% is a decent amount actually for a loyalty card.
Yes. For every single purchase, right?
Yeah.
And that would be either, I think you could have that as a credit card or a debit card. That won't work with Apple Pay yet, anytime soon. We don't know. But they just said, you know, not at launch. But working at Target is a big finally, because they were notorious for having bad financial security, to the point where they promoted checks, and they worked from day one in the Target app. But you had to purchase the Target app and then pick it up in store, which was, you know, inconvenient if you just wanted to, like, you know, make a purchase in the store. And so it's not there yet. And we saw like a month ago, some Target stores in the San Francisco area testing this, and we reported it then. And now they say they're going to have it, you know, everywhere in the next few weeks or months or so. So it's a pretty big one. The Taco Bell one is just like, okay, neat. You know, I don't think anyone was like waiting for that to happen, but Target, they definitely were, because it is one of the major national, just like general, you know, stores that you can shop from, like Walmart. And Walmart's whole deal is they want you to use Walmart Pay as their smart, you know, way to pay. Without, if you don't want to use a chip and pen method, or cash, then they want you to use the Walmart app where you scan a QR code. And it's basically like the whole currency thing where, you know, you trade information, what you purchased, and, there's no savings involved. It's just, that's why you pay. Then you get your receipt digitally, which is neat. And then you can submit it. And then if there's like savings to be had, they'll compare it to local prices and give you a discount if there's anything there as a credit. But they're very resistant to just letting you pay with your iPhone, you know, anonymously, securely, conveniently. And it's kind of a pain, but Target, you know, I think we'll see those come online pretty soon. So that's neat. And then we saw, I know our listeners in Australia and New Zealand will be happy to know that I think CommBank and then a bank in New Zealand, got Apple Pay this month, as of this week. So, that was pretty exciting. So,
there was actually one other Apple Pay Australia story.
That
they added, I think on Friday, in Australia, they have dual network cards, which have Visa, and then they have electronic bank transfer. And if you pay by Visa, you have to pay fees. Whereas if you're doing like bank transfer, you avoid the credit card fee. Mm-hmm. And today, the dual network cards would only ever work with Visa on Apple Pay. But on Friday, they rolled out an update where they actually added some like new UI to the wallet app where you can just choose the payment mode at checkout. Or if you're at your watch, you just press on the screen when your card pops up and you say, do you want to use bank transfer or do you want to use Visa? And clearly this is a big thing in Australia versus the rest of the world where dual network cards aren't really a thing. But in Australia now, you can avoid credit card charges with Apple Pay where you couldn't before. That was pretty cool, actually, and just kind of out of the blue.
Yeah, definitely. In the U.S., like the best implementation of like all of this for me has been Walgreens from day one. They worked with Apple Pay, and then later on, like whenever it was supported to have a rewards card through Apple Pay, like not just scan a QR code in the wallet app, but use it over NFC. Now in Walgreens, like in the last year or so, you can go in and you can scan your phone, automatically have your rewards card pop up by location. And then you scan that during the transaction. And then when you get ready to pay, you just scan again with your debit card or credit card. And it's like just two taps, basically. And you've not had to enter in your phone number for looking up your rewards card. And you don't have to use your, chip, put it in, insert, wait for it to beep, take it out for the debit or credit card. So that's been the best thing. And I wish that like everyone would do that. So like Target, they want to have their rewards program, tie it into a rewards card that isn't also the debit or credit card. And the same thing for Walmart. Like they want to have their thing, have a rewards card that like they can be really skimpy on what they reward you with. but just say, points, every so many points is worth a dollar. That's what Target does, or Walgreens does. So I think there's a model that they can use where you still, the retailers still get customer information, but the customer still gets the benefit of tap to pay.
And that's obviously what Apple wants to promote because that's how they support loyalty cards at the moment in Wallet. Where
right.
If you're at the retailer with a loyalty card, it can present that to you automatically versus taking over the actual Apple Pay payment bit of it.
Yeah, because I'm happy to share what I purchased with the retailer. That's not a concern for me. Like if it is, then don't use it. But I don't mind opting into that kind of a thing. I use it with Walgreens. And so for that to be the reason that Target would hold out for so long or that Walmart would hold out for, forever is too bad. So hopefully they can sort it out in the future. Also this week, there's been a fun announcement that Apple is doing its first ever shot on iPhone photo contest. This is really interesting to me. I like taking pictures on the iPhone and, I get compliments on many of my photos. And so I submitted one like via email. You can submit it. The main way is that you post on Twitter or Instagram using the hashtag shot on iPhone, which Apple has used for years as like marketing, and customers alike to like show off that they took good photos on an iPhone. Works on Weibo too with hashtag shot on iPhone hashtag. And then there will be a panel of 10 judges, including Phil Schiller and, the former, photographer, Barack Obama's White House, Peter Souza, as well as Austin Mann, who reviews iPhones and Apple products as a photographer. And they'll pick 10 photos that will be used on billboards and ads around the world, for free, but you submit it and you've got until February 7th to enter the contest. It's kind of neat. Like, I think there's been debate around, like, should the winners be, paid or in some way or not? I don't really have thoughts on that. Like, I think it would just be neat to just win. Cause like,
I can give you an opinion.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
if they'd announced the competition and they said winners get $10,000, everyone would just be complaining that it wasn't more. Right. Honestly, that's what it would be. But Apple's so stingy. They're only giving you $10,000. Why don't winners get $50,000? They can afford it. Like, whatever number, if they'd have picked a number, everyone would be unhappy with it anyway. Like, guaranteed. And the problem is if they do pick numbers, these things, every time in the future when they do other ads, like when they do other ads in the future based on shot on iPhone stuff, they're all going to want to be paid as well. That is the problem, and that's why they're not doing it, because they don't want to set precedent for every iPhone ad to date to, we're going to give you 50 grand every time we use one of your pictures. I think maybe they could have had some sort of commensurate gesture, like you get a free iMac Pro or you get a free...
The things where charity buys, which is a service that you can, like, Apple's done auctions through charity buys where they raise money for a charity of their choice, and they auction off something like lunch with Tim Cook and a free ticket to an Apple event. Like, that would be, I think people would go crazy for that. Like,
or even just like a meeting with the panel that mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, I know they're probably gonna, you know, meet in person if they win anyway, but like as a formal part of the prize, like you come to Apple Park and you can have a, you know, a lunch with Phil and Austin Mann and everybody, and you can talk about photography stuff, like an experience kind of prize versus, you know, monetary would probably be.
I totally get the argument again, like why people are some people are upset about not being compensated, because there is this whole thing of like an industry-wide problem of not paying for art, but, you know, writing.
Paying in exposure.
Yeah, exactly. It's a classic thing. It's like you get paid in exposure. It's going to make you know, viable to more people. It's like that doesn't really scale, and now exposure is free anyway with social media, so I get that. I think this is just like, this is for, I think it's totally neat that they're doing this for one, because it's just kind of,
I think it's cool.
New.
yeah
it's out of the blue. It's like, you know, Phil Schiller is the marketing chief, he's one of the judges. Like, it's probably a Phil idea or someone in marketing's idea, because obviously it's a marketing thing, and it's, you know, they could have done this at any point in the
I mean, that's the funny thing about it is like, as soon as they announced this, I was like, wait, that they haven't done this before. You know what I mean? Like, shot an iPhone is like the perfect place for, oh, because that's kind of what they did, right? They would find some photographers who are doing iPhone photography and then feature them in ads. Mm-hmm. This is kind of the same thing, but formalized into like a proper contest.
Yeah. And in the announcement, they even have photos, like the first two at least, are from iPhone 7 and from iPhone 6S. So that just goes to show that they could have been doing this all along. But it also speaks to like the quality of old iPhones. I mean, like the iPhone 6S and 7 aren't considered new iPhones anymore, but they're featuring really great photographs in the announcement about showing off your iPhone photographs on your new iPhone.
Yeah, if you have good lighting, you know, a 6S is perfectly fine for taking a picture.
Yeah, and there are some rules to this contest. Like, you're not allowed to use like external hardware, like, you know, a big lighting rig and that kind of thing. Like, I think even like an Olo clip, you know, those add-on lenses, you know, would kind of disqualify you. But they just want it to be shot on the iPhone. You're allowed to use third-party apps. They even have an app store story promoting this whole thing with like third-party camera apps, which is pretty neat.
And
they
are, say, you allowed to edit on the Mac, or does it have to be on the phone?
They mentioned this as like a whole PDF you can look at of like the rules. You're allowed to like edit the picture and like, you know, crop it, do the magic adjustment, or, you know, touch it up in the Photos app. But they want to know that you did that. Like, if it's straight shot, you know, you just say straight shot. Or if it's, if you know, if you win, they guess they ask you the questions. But you're not allowed to use, like, you know, I guess Photoshop to do it. It needs to be like the Photos app. I would think that the photos on the Mac app would be fine.
Yeah. I will say, if you want to enter this contest, send them the email. I would not put faith in, you know, the 10 panel filtering through thousands upon thousands of shot on iPhone hashtag tweets. Like,
which people,
if
did
you want to actually go in for this, send the email to that email address at the bottom of the press release, and at least then you know it's actually going to a pile that will be manageable for them to look through.
Well, and people tag pictures with a shot on iPhone every day anyway.
But yes, if you use hundreds of thousands a day, surely.
Yeah, and if you use the email address, like, no one's using that except for this contest. It's I think it's shot on iPhone at apple.com, and then the only rule there is that your picture has to be have the file name format is like your first name underscore last name underscore iPhone model. So like mine was Zachary underscore Hall underscore iPhone XS Max dot, you know, HEIC, whatever. Which is pretty neat. And I just took my image and like exported the unmodified version from the Photos app on the Mac, and that made, like, I think it might have made a JPEG, I don't know. But it was the still shot, not with the, I guess it also sends out the movie file too, because it's a live photo. But yeah, it's a neat thing. Like, I had just taken a picture the day before that I thought was pretty nice, and then people complimented. And like, I've got pictures of my home that like I've printed from Walgreens or whoever, that were made on the iPhone that are, you know, 8x10s or panorama shots, you know, that I frame and put up, because like, you know, if like enough people mention that's a good shot, and I'm like, it really is. So I'll hang it up, and then people will see it in my home, and I like that. So this is a neat thing. I like this contest. It's you can even I saw in the fine print you can email a specific email address as of like March 1st and request to find out who the winners were. So that's probably like a regulation, but that's pretty neat. So yeah, well, it will be interesting to see if they repeat this every year, if it's like beginning of the year kind of thing, or what and how it goes. So. Looking forward to it. Are you going to enter in a photo?
Maybe. I have nice photos, but they're all taken with like random cameras from years ago. Recent years, I was trying to think, like, if I had a picture that I wanted to submit, I would have done it, but I'm not going to go on a mission to go and take one in the next 2 weeks, because realistically, I'm not going to win anyway. So
yeah, that's how I felt too. But I did send one off. For me, the day before this was announced, I wanted to capture some footage with my drone just for the pleasure of it. And so I had some free time around like 5:30. And so it was like the sunset over the water near me. And so like I raced over there and got some neat drone footage and took some still shots from the drone too. And then I was like, when I was done, landed the drone, I was like, I really want to take some pictures with my phone too. And so I took a handful, and a bunch of them turned out like nice. Like I took like 20 and like 5 were pretty good. I just had one of those handy. It's like, I'll send this in. So yeah, it's no expectation to win, but I think it's really fun. Like if you enjoy iPhone photography, I think this is a fun contest to enter, with no expectation of winning, but just for the heck of it, participate. So I'll see how it goes.
This week, 9to5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by ExpressVPN. Protect your online activity today and find out how you can get 3 months free at expressvpn.com/happyhour. With all the recent news about online security breaches, it's hard not to worry about where your data goes. Making an online purchase or simply accessing your email could put your private information at risk. You're being tracked online by social media sites, marketing companies, and your mobile or internet provider. Not only can they record your browsing history, but they can often sell it to corporations who want to profit from your information. That's why we recommend taking back your privacy by using ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN has easy-to-use apps that run seamlessly in the background of your computer, phone, or tablet. Turning on ExpressVPN protection only takes one click, and ExpressVPN secures and anonymizes your internet browsing by encrypting your data and hiding your public IP address. Protecting yourself with ExpressVPN costs less than $7 a month, and ExpressVPN is rated the number one VPN service by TechRadar. It also comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you ever use public Wi-Fi and want to keep hackers and spies from seeing your data, ExpressVPN is the solution. If you don't want to hand over your online history to your internet service provider or data resellers, ExpressVPN is the answer. ExpressVPN also removes restrictions and creates internet without borders, defeating online content restrictions and censorship to deliver unlimited access to videos, music, social media, and more from anywhere in the world. And ExpressVPN offers unlimited bandwidth with a VPN that's built for speed and customer service over email or chat that's available 24/7. Protect your online activity today and find out how you can get 3 months free at expressvpn.com/happyhour. That's expressvpn.com/happyhour for 3 months free with a 1-year package. expressvpn.com/happyhour to learn more. Our thanks to ExpressVPN for sponsoring 9to5 Mac Happy Hour.
All right, Mayo, we've got a lot of new rumors for iPhones and iPads and AirPods. So
there was like a whole swelling of kind of sketchy, not really sure rumor mill content this week, it feels like.
Yeah, it ranges from DigiTimes to the Wall Street Journal, which is to say shaky to more solid. So starting out is a report from the Wall Street Journal that you covered, which the headline is Apple to drop LCD in favor of OLED on all new iPhones from next year. So I presume that means all the 2020 iPhones, not correct, this year's update, but all next year's update. And the only thing that would mean is that the if there's three iPhones in 2020 and they're all, inspired by 10R, 10S, 10S Max, iterations, then they would just stop doing LCD on the 10R, right?
Yeah, that it means if they're going to carry on doing three phones next year, the 10R will be the 10R successor. The successor after the current successor will be
the 10R.
The 10R. And the reason they quote the Wall Street Journal says is to enable more flexible phone designs. Now, they say flexible, and I think people jumped on it as, oh, you can fold the phone in half, because actually we're seeing a lot of Android manufacturers shelf prototypes as foldy phones at the moment, so it's kind of the hit news topic, is foldable phones. I'm pretty sure what the Wall Street Journal meant is more flexible in how phones can be designed, not that the phone...
Dynamic designs, right?
Yeah, not that the phone is physically flexible. So there's less... Because when you go to something, you go to a screen technology that doesn't have a backlight, that doesn't have to have a separate backlight, because obviously LCD pixels don't light themselves. You have to have this light-up layer behind, which has to be rigid.
And the edges are tough, too, because you don't want to have the big flood.
Yep. Whereas OLED, each pixel is individually lit, which allows them to be more creative in how the pixels are curved or how the screen can bend. Or we even see this today on the 10S and 10S Max. The pixels on the screen go closer to the edge because they don't have to worry about fitting backlights on the sides, whereas the 10R has thicker side bezels. Like, it's thinner than the older generations, but it's still thicker compared to the OLED phones that we know today.
Yeah. We mentioned the TV technology a few weeks ago with the AirPlay 2 stuff coming, and that's been the biggest thing for me is, like, between LCD and OLED is that originally with LCD screens, like flat screen TVs even, like, they were LCD was expensive and they were all really nice, but now you can make really cheap LCD screens that have really bad backlight. So, like, one 40-inch screen that costs several hundred dollars, but it's cheap on relative terms, will have, like, 3 to 5 vertical bulbs lighting up the back of it. And it's like, you know, the best you can do is, like, light 3 out of the 5, but, like, you can totally see them behind the screen because of, like, brightness areas. Whereas, like, on OLED, you don't get that. Like, it's just, like, it's evenly lit. The blacks are blackest, you know, the contrast is infinite, you know, and that's what we see on the iPhone as well. It's like, you've never seen it that bad on the iPhone where you see, like, the bulb back there, but it is like that was, like, regions of lighting the screen, you know, versus pixel by pixel.
Yeah, and they just kind of have enough bulbs arranged to try and smooth out the bits in between. And it mostly works, but you can definitely find out, especially when you put it on, like, full brightness and stuff. Like, my iPad Pro? Yeah, my iPad Pro has weird white spots in a couple of places when I turn the brightness up. And I bet that wouldn't happen if there were OLED screens. So, yeah, rather than Wall Street Journal saying flexible designs, they probably should put more creative designs or some other word to describe it that doesn't have the connotation of bending. Mm-hmm. But interestingly, on that point, if you think back to a report from Bloomberg last year, it said Apple was exploring curved phones, so not like flexible ones, but ones that, like, curve like a banana. Hmm. So you know, because obviously the current glass of the iPhones curves on the left and right, like to join up with the chassis, so it does like one smooth loop around the edge, but the actual like curve vertically, there's no curve to the screen vertically, so more like a banana shape is something that Apple was apparently experimenting with, and that is the kind of thing that, you know, OLED would support and LCD wouldn't. We've also obviously heard of Apple exploring mini LED, which is kind of halfway between LCD and OLED in a way in terms of the technology, and again it's kind of like OLED but is able to be even thinner, and apparently Apple is designing its own mini LED screens, which would ultimately show up in like Apple Watches and maybe iPhones eventually, but that's a more longer term thing that probably won't come to fruition until like 2023, 2024. So that's a few ways out. We're going to be on the OLED train from next year, seemingly.
Yeah. Micro, not mini, right?
Yes, micro. Yeah, I said mini, didn't I? Yeah, micro LED.
Yeah, mini, that's another version.
Yeah,
so there's so many LEDs. TV manufacturers especially love to like brand LEDs and all this stuff. Like, we'll put an LED here and an LED there.
So, and the new thing is, I think Samsung has QLED.
Which is trying to fake to be called like quantum LCD, but it's not. Yeah. It's just a different version of OLED. It's very stupid.
I literally think when, you know, my first job selling TVs at Sears was, you know, and there was a Sharp TV that had a yellow pixel. I think that was like, they use quantum in some way to say like a fourth color between RGB and yellow, red, blue, green, and yellow. And that's a timeless trend in TVs. Yeah, the you know,
the thing with I hope it doesn't neutralize battery life, like the way that that's part of why the 10R does well right now is because of LCD, because like if iOS were like watchOS, where it's primarily like pixels that aren't lining up everywhere, it's a black UI, and then you put white text around it or color text around it, not like primarily white with like, you know, everything lights up, then the iPhone would benefit from that. But we've not seen the battery life gains from OLED on the iPhone because of how iOS is designed. And
OLED is more costly on battery life when not doing black.
Right.
On average, the OLED screens use more power.
Yeah, and that's partly why the iPhone XR can get better battery life, because it's using LCD. Like visually, it's less impressive, but in terms of battery, it's more energy efficient because of how iOS is designed today. You know, 2 years off, I guess, kind of, you know, from the XR, really. Then
yeah, the this year's XR replacement will still be LCD.
Yeah. You could see all of the iPhones getting better battery life, and all the iPhone, like, you wouldn't see the weird thing where the $800 one gets better battery life than the $1,400 one, you know, which is kind of a weird difference between the phones. Hopefully, though, what would happen is that all the iPhones just get as good as the XR is today. Not that they go back to what the 10 is, for example. So
yeah, in the wake of, you know, Apple's sales being a bit mediocre, they are shoving the battery life thing on the 10R as such a factor. Anywhere you look, it's like, yeah, this phone has the longest battery life of any iPhone ever. And
yeah, it's high up there on the list of what customers want. And they've done it without making the phone, like, you know, hilariously thick, too. It's thicker than the 10 and 10S and 10S Max. It doesn't feel way thicker.
Yeah. But it's funny that in September 2018, when they announced the phones, they didn't talk about the longest battery life in an iPhone ever on the 10R as much, because they didn't want to make the 10S series look bad. But as soon as they need to rile up the iPhone sales, everywhere you look, headline feature is battery life, battery life, battery life. And yeah, it is honestly great. Like, half my family have 10Rs now, it feels like, and the battery life they get compared to my iPhone 10 is unbelievably, it's like miles apart. If they could put that battery life into an iPhone 10 form factor, I'd be over the moon 10 times over.
Yep. One thing that makes me wonder, though, is like, how are they going to keep the cost of the 10R, you know, size? Like if you do OLED on all the phones, and that's one less difference between all the models. Like, they're just all OLED, unless like one's OLED, one's micro OLED, and that's a difference for some reason that customers care about. But like, do you still charge $800 and $1,000 for like the same, for where the bigger phone costs less than the smaller phone does, because there's other features like, a you know, camera differences, or like aluminum versus steel, I think people care less about, especially if you use a case, you don't get to appreciate that as much, and it makes the phone heavier to be steel versus aluminum. And even with this year, there's another report that this one's an analyst report from Barclays, so it's less of like a, you know, we're hearing, but we think this will happen. Barclays analysts think that the this year's iPhone XR update will have the same 4x4 MIMO LTE as the iPhone XS, which is like one differentiating factor right now, is that you get better LTE performance in theory on the XS and XS Max than you do on the XR. Well, that might go away this year as a difference. It's like,
yeah, if you're in the reception area where the fast speeds are supported, it will be noticeably different, like twice as fast.
Right.
But
I'm not
worldwide. It doesn't really, you don't really see it that much, I don't think.
Right. But it is one thing that goes into the expense of the iPhone, the cost for Apple. And so all the rumors are saying that the XR phone gets less and less, you know, it catches up more and more with the higher end phones. And presumably the higher end phones get new features too. But like, I feel like OLED's a pretty big one to be the same on all three phones.
Yeah, but I mean, it's always like leapfrogging around and stuff. Like,
yeah.
The high-end model this year is getting a triple camera, whereas the XR won't, for instance, and maybe even the XS non-max won't. And then next year, they'll probably start contending with 5G antennas, so they can put 5G in the XS equivalent and not in the XR equivalent. Like, there's always this progression, yeah, isn't there?
And like, every Apple Watch, even the cheapest, you know, Series 1, for example, or in first-generation Apple Watches, whether they're aluminum or steel, they've all had OLED. And so it must be that OLED isn't expensive on its own. It's just, like, how much you can make. Like, how much
the OLED in the watch is different to the OLED they use on the phones.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah, because the... I believe the OLED in the watch is made by LG.
Mm.
And the OLED on the phones is made by Samsung.
Yeah,
so
I mean, customer-facing, you don't see a difference. It's like... you get the same
benefits. Well, that's not true. Actually, if you want to be really technical, there's actually there's a problem with the iPhone OLEDs, which is, and I can't remember what the acronym stands for, but it's PWM. Mm-hmm. And what it's kind of like how the screen refreshes, the pixels refresh, but they refresh at a weird rate that some people can get like motion sickness by looking at the iPhone for too long, or like their eyes start getting tired. And for whatever reason, on the smartphone size screens, like the 5-6 inches, to produce them at scale, they have to use this process with PWM at the moment, at least. Like, I'm sure they're working on ways not to do that. But on the Apple Watch screens, it does not use PWM, so you don't actually get that same effect. It's like the difference between like making an OLED screen for a phone versus an OLED screen for a TV. Like, they're all made by different factories and are slightly different processors and stuff.
Pulse width modulation, for anyone who hasn't Googled it yet. The classic PWM. So I guess OLED isn't equal on all things, but at any rate, they've never, like, it would be terrible to have an LCD Apple Watch for aluminum models and OLED for the steel models. Yet, you know, and they haven't had to do that, but on the iPhones, they needed to do that so far. And so that might go away soon, maybe, according to the WSJ, next year. It is fun to see 2020 iPhone rumors when we haven't yet, you know, gotten a solid feel for what 2019 iPhones will be like.
Yeah, we are late on the 2019 cycle in terms of rumor stuff. It's predominantly because of Ming-Chi Kuo hasn't put out his big, you know, September what to expect kind of post yet, because a kind of report. He even admitted it at the end of last year. Like, he did a report on iPad mini stuff, and at the end he was like, I'm sorry, but I won't have visibility onto the iPhone 2019 supply chain until later. So it's like, we're still waiting around, because normally he'll release the next gen phone reports like a month after the the October, November timeframe of the previous year.
Right.
Whereas now we're, you know, approaching the January, and he doesn't quite yet know. So maybe there's going to be something very significant that changes, or it kind of plays into the idea that they haven't quite locked down what they're doing for this year yet. Like, maybe they're still choosing between different options, which kind of gives a bit more credence to that, you know, where we've seen those two renders that are very different. Like, if Kuo doesn't know what the suppliers are doing, then maybe stuff is more up in the air at the moment.
Maybe there have been
knock-on effects from the slower sales this year, the less impressive numbers. Maybe Apple is recalculating some things. Like, I'm sure they can't change their entire plan in on a 9-month time frame, but there must be some sort of tweaks they can do that maybe if they delay it by 2 months, they can, you know, change some of the product lineup for this year, whereas before they'd already be dead set and looking, you know, beyond that.
Yeah, it would be so frustrating if we don't have rumors yet is a sign that the iPhones are not in September, but they're, you know, in October or November or December. Like, imagine if the iPhones barely made this year for the first time ever for some reason. Like, you know, we don't hear that yet, but like, that would be a pretty big story, I think, because we've seen the 8 make September and the 10 make November, and then the 10S make September and the 10R make October. But at least one of the phones is made September. Like, if this year everything was just behind schedule for some reason, and it was that, you know, the event is like October for some reason and the phone shipping like even later than usual, then that'd be disappointing and probably pretty bad for Apple, I think. Although
we have to wait and see on that one.
Yeah, it would make the year over year compare maybe easier in some ways, but. And then separately, the WSJ reports that Apple is making progress on plans to produce iPhones in India. So far, they make the SE and the 6S in India, or they have it at some time. And now they're maybe closer to making more phones in India, which can be good for price. And
yeah, the story is about making modern iPhones, so not the three-year-old models. But even if you do make, the problem with the India market is that, you know, their wages are so low that even if you do make an iPhone 10R without the cross-country import taxes, is still going to be 4 times as expensive as the domestic competition of, you know, really cheap Android phones. So they've got an uphill battle there, and I don't think the answer is just being like, even making SEs today is not the answer. Making 10s or 10Ss today isn't the answer either. So I think that's still a big like question mark of how they're actually going to address that properly, because the pricing is just so out of whack. Like, if we think it's bad here, like, some of their iPhones in India at the moment are priced the same amount as an entire year salary. It's like ridiculous average salary differences. It's And it's just a completely different thing. And how are you going to expect people to spend their entire yearly salary on one phone? Like, it's just untenable.
All right, Mayo, and wrapping up the rumors this week, a flurry of different stories from DigiTimes, which we know has a mixed track record. We have to say it every time. Really, they get big picture or like more granular details right sometimes, but the timing can be wrong. That's what I'd say about DigiTimes, even though they have time in their name. The first report is really disappointing. Well, the AirPods 2 one's okay. So what's the AirPods 2 story from DigiTimes this week?
So they say that a second generation of AirPods is coming within the first half of this year, so up to June, and they will feature a new design that incorporates health monitoring features. Firstly, second generation AirPods presumably doesn't just mean the current AirPods with the wireless charging case.
Right,
because that kind of be a downer. And then they explicitly mention a redesign, which doesn't really gel with the kind of other rumors we've been hearing about AirPods stuff, where it would be more of an iterative update in 2019 with a redesign in 2020. So it's kind of like a year early.
Time is off.
We haven't really had any specific like firm lockdown on that stuff. It's kind of been, you know, like Bloomberg reporting yet in 2018 about 2 years ahead, and so it has been a bit like up in the air, so I wouldn't like discount it straight up.
And there are prototypes that Apple makes that they never release,
you know, sure,
in between models that never make it out the door.
What I think this is, and this is mostly guesswork, is not AirPods 2 necessary, but an AirPods Pro or AirPods Plus or some AirPods higher Sport tier of AirPod, yeah, that is a more expensive and therefore has more features in it. Maybe it is in-ear style, potentially. So, like, you can kind of hit two birds with one stone. You keep the current AirPods as they are, give them a wireless charging case, the Bluetooth update that we heard about going to Bluetooth 5, and then keep the price the same, and then add this kind of AirPods alternative form factor, which is maybe in-ear, so it supports... So for the people in the world that the AirPods do fall out, genuinely, they have an option to get truly wireless earbuds from Apple, and then also maybe put some sort of like health feature in there as well to kind of round it out. What health feature it is, they don't say. I struggle to think about what health things they could detect from your ear, because like an accelerometer is kind of redundant because you carry your phone in your pocket, which has a motion coprocessor, and then you have your Apple Watch as well, which it can do motion and do heart rate way better than just, you know, the buds in your ear could. The obvious one is like temperature, because you get those like things where you stick a needle in your ear or a thermometer in your ear, and they use that to detect like body temperature. So maybe that's what it will be, and it can like tell you if you're having a fever, but I don't know if you've got any other ideas there. It just seems like a weird place to have like biometric sensors, really.
Yeah, no, it's the fact that you need to have another device like the iPhone or the Apple Watch to play content on, because AirPods don't have local storage or local radios for like streaming things, then you've just got a better device for that. Like it would need to not reproduce something that the Apple Watch can do, but like something that it can't, like you mentioned, you know, temperature, which would just be kind of awkward for like it would just be like, it would just happen to catch temperature as you use it for another purpose, you know, which is to, you know, listen to music. So I don't know.
Yeah, because unlike the Apple Watch, you don't have your AirPods in all day long.
Right.
Like, your watch is always on your wrist, but your AirPods are not always in your ear. And even if you use them every day, it might be only for like an hour or two every day, for instance. Like,
yeah, the fact that they just say health monitoring and they don't say anything more specific makes me think that they're maybe just looking at the fact that Apple has so many patents for health.
Yeah, features. They're kind of guessing, I feel like, maybe.
Because, yeah. I mean, you could say one thing specifically. You could say step tracking or heart rate tracking or anything like that. But they don't say, they just say health monitoring in the DigiTimes. But there are like countless patents that Apple's applied for and won for, you know, because they patent everything under the sun just to protect themselves. Like,
and trademarks. They've trademarked like the AirPods name under the health category as well.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know.
Like the other limitation you have to bear in mind is battery life, in that the buds have very, very small batteries. And so even if you could do like a heart rate monitor in the ear, I feel like you wouldn't be able to run optical sensors for that long without impairing, you know, the main function of the AirPods, which is to play music for a long period of time. So maybe they've got some magical thing up their sleeves that we haven't thought about yet, but that one seems less probable than the, oh, there's another AirPods variant with a, you know, that's in-ear design, for instance.
Yeah.
Or water resistance. That's the other rumor we've been hearing, isn't it? Like, proper water resistance.
Yeah, and even there's like a few steps, like water resistance, so that they're actually rated for the gem, for like running in rain and sweating on regularly. You know, Beats are, so, you know, there are models of Beats that are that, but AirPods are not. And then the next thing would be like, if you can actually like go swim with them, which I don't think Apple's going to make that. I think that's a little too far. And there are headphones like this company called Braggy. It's been around for a while. I don't know if they're still in business or not, but they've been trying to sell wireless earbuds that are huge, but they are wireless earbuds that have, like the ones I'm looking at have sensors to track workouts, they say.
But is it Apple Watch stuff though, right? Like,
yeah, and they've got built-in storage, so they can kind of work on their own, you know. So it's just the headphones. But even then, it sounds like they give you feedback on heart rate, steps, cadence, strokes from swimming, duration. But they're very big, and so it's like instead of an Apple Watch, and I feel like the Apple Watch is doing this quite well without. And, you know, you don't get 3 hours of power per charge that they advertise here. It's pretty tough. So, yeah, DigiTimes. My guess is DigiTimes is guessing, too, based on the flurry of patents that Apple has been
yeah, awarded. Maybe they got a tidbit on the redesign and then kind of extrapolate from there. Oh, let's throw health monitoring in the mix.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it's like the better report from DigiTimes this week. The next one is on AirPower, which
this one is so bad.
finds a way to become a story every week somehow. Just from our coverage, they say coming later in 2019. They also say imminent in the same sentence, which is very confusing. The report's mostly to focus on like the suppliers that will benefit, but then you taught me today that the original story before the later version had more detail, had more claim to it. So what did they originally say?
Yeah, so basically the AirPower bit in the first sentence is AirPower will be available later in 2019. That line is still in the story. But every other reference to AirPower, they have pulled out. So originally it also said AirPower is finally in production, said the sources. And it said imminent launch of AirPower later in 2019, which is kind of a oxymoron because imminent and later doesn't really add up.
Right.
But they're like the biggest claims, like an imminent launch and already in production. And when I woke up and I checked the source story, they'd been pulled away. And then I checked the caches and yep, they were there originally and then they're gone. So, like, they took a kind of mess story anyway, because also this GBP rectifier shipment thing, they had a very similar story on this exact topic about the same time last year, where they said GBP shipments were going to ramp up in March as AirPower comes out, and obviously AirPower didn't come out last year. So they took a kind of waffy story anyway, and they made it even worse by editing out, like, the key points of it. So I wouldn't even like count this as an AirPower rumor at this point. It's like so bad on the scale.
Okay, and then the third DigiTimes story is about the iPad.
This one's good. I like this one.
Yeah. So they mentioned the entry level iPad, which so far has been 9.7 inches. Ming-Chi Kuo is first, and so far I think only they said that 9.7 goes to 10 inches this year. And then they also mentioned the iPad Mini 5, which Kuo was first to report, and they say the first half of the year for that.
Yep, and this gels up perfectly with at least my speculation about them doing a cheaper iPad mini, make the iPad the new, because the new entry-level iPad can still be entry-level, but be more expensive.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. $499, like the iPads used to cost $499 for, like, it was the iPad. And then there was a mini, then there's a pro, and then there's a cheaper version of the normal size one. Then the pros got bigger and bigger. I think it would be fine to have an iPad mini for $329, an iPad for $499, and then the pros, you know, out in $800 land and $1,000 land.
Yeah, I think if they did like $299 mini, $399, you know, 9.7 inch, which we think that's going to 10 inches.
Be even better, yeah.
Yeah, and then that's kind of like, that's where I've had it in my head. Because I feel like breaking the $400 mark is just going to upset everybody. And I still think that one's going to be essential for school purchases. And again, they could separate it out and be like, we can still give you the $329 iPad for schools, but as general consumers, you're paying $400. Because the $329 iPad is like the best value Apple product that exists at the moment, I'm pretty sure. It's way better than the equivalent entry-level phone, for instance.
For the amount of computer that you get for that product, it's really good.
Or you can spend $1,000 on a Mac and you're getting the 2017 MacBook Air old version. Or you can spend $329 and get a very modern iPad that is basically, effectively as fast for most people's everyday tasks, right? Like the processor in that is perfectly well equipped for the 90%. It would be as fast as a Pro for what you're doing. It doesn't have promotion and stuff, but in general, the amount of computer you're getting over $329 is actually ridiculous.
Yeah, like my older brother right now doesn't have an iPhone or an iPad or anything Apple, and he really wants to have access to FaceTime, and he thinks that he wants an iPhone of some kind. And I keep telling him, for now, for like what you need in this time of your life, buy the $329 iPad or last year's version of it, which is still really good. Because you don't need the pencil stuff, and it's a really, you get a lot of computer for that money, And if you want to splurge, add cellular and pay monthly for that if you want to, that iPad is the best value from Apple products, right now.
So maybe if they're coming in first half of the year, March spring event probably.
Yeah, I mean they had I haven't looked at the history and recently, but wasn't it . Spring event, then 1 year there wasn't, and then there was, and then there was. So they've had on and off.
The both of the 329 iPads have been refreshed in the spring.
Yeah, I think what it was, we had the small iPad Pro shown with the iPhone SE for the first time in a spring event, and then the next year there was nothing.
Yeah.
And then the next 2 years we've had these
educationally spring events, right, where they've done $329 iPads.
And last year was the biggest version of that, where it was very little event about it, but there is a new iPad, which is a really good deal. So yeah,
or at least there was a big event if you were there, but they didn't film it or anything.
Yeah, they released it afterward. It wasn't live streamed. It was released after. And then finally, I think it's fair to assume March, April or so, before WWDC, we see the iPad stuff. If AirPower is on its own timeline, AirPods.
Yeah, AirPower is literally unconnected to any other schedule. It's they're working on it. When it's ready to go out the door, it'll be out the door. I hate the thing on Twitter at the moment. Says, oh, maybe it's coming out with the battery cases. Oh, maybe it's coming out with iOS 12.2. Oh, maybe it's coming out on the Apple investor call. They're going to announce it on the earnings call. Apparently, there's one thing I read today.
It's kind of case. It's the center clear case and then all the battery cases. It's their launch day should have been when the phones were out. But then Apple couldn't do it for whatever
reason. Even with the battery cases, we saw those things where they're labeled fall 2018. Clearly were meant to be out, not when they came out. But hey, they hit a few snags and then they're out, randomly on a Wednesday.
Yeah. So AirPods on its own timeline. AirPods, they're 2 years old now. They're still a big hit. But the batteries are depleting in early adopters AirPods. So we need new ones to buy, upgrade to.
And the Qi charging case can be completely independent of any AirPower stuff as well. They can release that whenever they want.
Yeah,
and even if it, in its current form, it's only promises an optional extra, so they could carry on bundling wired cases in the boxes and just sell you the wireless charging cases whenever whatever day they please. It doesn't even have any impact on stock as they've promised, because all they promise is it'll be an optional extra.
And there's plenty of precedent for the spring iPad lower end of the iPad update. Not to say low end, but not the pro versions of the iPad, not the astronomically priced iPads in the spring. So, feel good about that. iMac, we need a new consumer iMac update. I know everyone loves iPad Pro, iMac Pro. I love it, but at least the consumer iMac needs an update now. Even if it
please makes be it, an external redesign, please.
I wouldn't bang on it. Even if it makes it's it so ugly, to the iMac, I can see it being only in space, or space gray, the Mac Mini is now, just like the iMac Pro. Same case design, true tone display for the first time.
That'd be so bad.
Yeah. newer specs,
The Microsoft Surface Studio is so much prettier than the iMac lineup at the moment. It's so much prettier. I don't care about the touchscreen. It's just the screen doesn't have 10-inch bezels around it and a massive chin as well.
Well, then you need a Mac Mini, an articulating arm, and a fancy display to put with it if you want that.
Do you think they're doing IMAX in spring or June?
Well, I'm just saying it's due at any time. Like, it's on the list to be updated.
Generally, the Mac stuff is like WWC timeframe, right?
Or October, which is way later in the year. I mean, so I think if it's something ready, you know, maybe throw it in there. Because they always have, like, there's often something random thrown in with the March updates. So they could do it. I don't know.
Yeah, they did the 12-inch MacBook at a March event.
Yep. Which it doesn't seem like that's going to be updated yet, even though it's...
Yeah,
it's,
what is
it's,
the fate of that product? That is an interesting one. Too. I feel like the general consensus, everyone thinks they're just not going to do anything with it until the ARM Mac stuff is ready.
Yeah.
Which could happen, I guess. But if the ARM stuff isn't happening until next year, we're just going to have a, you know... It's the classic problem of, oh, Apple just lets these products sit around. Right.
they do let products languish. They have no, you know...
Even after the Mac Roundtable, where they recommitted to everything, they've done exactly the same thing, where they just let products sit around and, oh, if there's not a significant change, we're just going to leave it as is.
I saw a movie this week that had a 12-inch MacBook in it, and it's a sharp... Like, if you didn't know it was slow and got warm, like, it's a sharp computer. It's the first time I saw it in a movie, even though it's 3 years old.
It's good eye candy.
Yeah, it is. So we'll see what happens there. Finally, this week with the iPad stuff, there's a new series of ads that highlight creative work that's made on iPad Pro. Like, that's the marketing line, is made on iPad Pro. Like, I think the ads are too, right?
Yep, the ads are, they say, filmed, like, designed and edited on an iPad Pro. And they're kind of, you know, the classic Apple ad with white background, iPads loading apps, doing different tasks. And they have ones for, like, podcasting and movie making and drawing and presentations. And I think their campaign's called, like, New Way, because it's like, do it on the iPad. It's different to do it on a computer. And they're really, really cool. And I love the basic Apple ads, where it's just, you know, white, simple background, no weird story or sentimental objective. It's just, here's some cool apps, and we're flicking around the iPad, and we're zooming about, and we're getting stuff done. And the fact that these ads are made on the iPads as well just reinforces that point so good. It's much a better... For me, it's way better than, like, the what's a computer ad, in terms of actually getting the message across of, you know, we are replacing the computer here in these ways, but, you know, we're not sticking our finger up to the other stuff. And it's a lot less tone deaf. It's way more on mark. Like, people will probably say it's more boring because it is safer. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's, like, perfect. I love it.
It's more logical.
My only complaint at the moment is they do not have a video showing them being made on an iPad Pro, which I feel like is the completion of the set. Like, you behind show all these things that you've made on the iPad Pro, but now I want to see the making of video, how did you make it on the iPad Pro?
Yeah, that seems like something I get to, like, to Ad Week or one of these, you know, advertising focused, you know, publications, and have a whole story behind that, if not just, like, other videos on YouTube that they show that don't go on TV. I like that. The whole what's a computer thing, it's just awkward for the computer company to say that, you know, especially when benefits like LTE not being on the Mac because Apple doesn't offer it. It's like, you know, it's hard to compare the iPad to what the Mac can't do when you make the choice. The thing with the iPad, like, I embrace the whole idea of, like, you can do the same task a different way, and it might be better in some ways, but you get the same result, you know, and it's a different form factor, and there's trade-offs and there's benefits to all that. I just think that the multitasking and stuff, and, like, how you get to split view and change apps, needs to be way more intuitive. Like, they've not yet hit the Apple bar for how you do that. Like, even for me.
Yeah, even in all these ads, they show, like, they're like 30 seconds ads, and they probably spend 5 seconds just doing the animation of going to the dock, long pressing on an icon, and then dragging it to a sidebar. Like, it's so slow and so... I'd love to see, like, the customer surveys on how many people don't even know they can do that, because I bet it's above 50%, because it's right. You would never work it out, I swear.
Yeah, and once you do know it, it's not optimal. Like, it's a lot of movement involved. Your fingers,
especially if you're not putting apps in the dock. That is by far the biggest problem with it. Like, it forces you to put all your apps in the dock, which is just ridiculous. And if you look at all of Apple's marketing, they only have 4 apps in the dock or 5 apps in the dock. They do not want you putting, you know, 20 apps in the dock or putting folders in the dock or all those random workarounds. As soon as you have to go to the home screen to multitask something, it becomes a complete nightmare. And I know how to do it. And if you if you like show a video of it, it's like, oh, you just drag it from here to here. But doing it is a completely different experience, and trying to describe how to do it to somebody else is, you know, it's just unfeasible. And I really, really hope that changes.
Yeah, my complaint my biggest complaint, you mentioned the home screen being the problem. For me, it's that if you have a keyboard, whether it's a smart keyboard or a Bluetooth keyboard or whatever, when you have access to command space for spotlight, and then you can suddenly type in an app name, like the first two letters, and you get the icon, then you can drag it there. Like, that avoids the home screen, but you've got to have a keyboard. So if you could do spotlight in some way, like with a gesture or something, and then do the same thing with a virtual keyboard, type it in, pull it out, I'd be happier with that even. Because I think that the iPad should be able to do everything with a keyboard, the on-screen keyboard, as without one. Like, because the iPad should be, like, at its core, just a tablet and not...
It should not be keyboard dependent.
Yeah, not borrowing a laptop, like not recreating a laptop. You should be able to do everything on just an iPad.
And if you pull down notifications, like swipe down while you're in the middle of an app, and then go to slide over to get to the search screen there, if you type in an app name, it does not let you drag it out.
Right.
Only if you're using a keyboard does it let you do it.
Yeah. So that's, I think it's a pain. And I've been using my iPad that way a lot lately, like doing the same task, but with no cover at all, like no keyboard case, no smart key, like just the iPad, because I feel like that's how I like the iPad the most, is like not even having the pencil like attached to it all the time. Like the pencil stays in my backpack now, and the keyboard case is in my backpack, and I just have the iPad as like a tablet. And I like it way more that way.
Yep.
And I can use on-screen keyboard for so much. But, even if it was like virtual command key, virtual spacebar, I would be okay with that. But there should be something to do that. So,
because they can do better ways than virtual keyboards, virtual command space, I guarantee it. They just – this current iteration, the multitasking needs work. But
yeah. Nice ads, though.
don't worry. iOS 13 will fix everything.
That's what they say.
After June, we'll have no complaints. They'll have addressed every single problem that exists in the world with iOS.
Yeah, it's a tall order for iOS 13. No.
There's no way they're going to do everything.
Yeah. A few more things to wrap up here. There's a new internal Apple Watch wellness challenge, an internal activity challenge for employees. So this is corporate and retail alike. It's the second one where they've had the prize be a custom Apple Watch band with colors based on the activity ring. So last year it was a black woven nylon band with a little loop that holds the excess part of the strap. That was tricolored like the rings are. This year it's a sport loop band, so not a woven nylon band, but it's the kind of hook and loop Velcro style. And the connectors for the watch part are kind of the pinkish color and the blue color. And then the clippy snap part at the very end of the loop is green. So you still got the three colors there. It's really, and then the band itself is like mostly black, looks like. It looks nice. I wish Apple would just sell these. I think it's also cool to have it as like, you know, Apple employees only. I just hope that like last year I can find an Apple employee willing to sell one. It helps that it's retail, because retail people are happier to part ways with it. I'm mark me down as on the market for one of these things from my collection. I've got last year's. I've worn it for a while. I like it. It's not my everyday Apple Watch band, but it's a special part of the collection.
Last year's looked better than this one.
I agree. I'm not as big of a fan of the sport loop bands for me. And I think I mentioned before, it's mostly the width of the bands. It's just wider than a sport band or the nylon bands are. But it's neat. It's different. So,
and we're on, what, June 23rd, and Apple has done two challenges that are not normal watch activity challenges. We've had the shot on iPhone challenge. We now got this internal employee challenge. Yeah. But there is nothing on the horizon at the moment for the normal Apple Watch medals.
Not June, but I understand what you mean.
Did I say June? Oops, I meant to say January.
There's a recording of it, so
check the tapes. Yeah, so we've gone through Thanksgiving, we've gone through Christmas, we've gone through New Year, where usually they used to have them, and there's just nothing. And it seems like they've broken something, but there's no change so far. I checked after they did the 5.1.3 update on Apple Watch to see if maybe they fixed it in there secretly, and the server still don't have any 2019 awards yet, and it's kind of dumb.
That aspect is super weird. Like, they even redesigned a bunch of the awards for in iOS 12, like in the activity app on the iPhone. It's super weird that they like seemingly broken how the challenges work. And internally, they use the it's a third party app that it's based on, because activity challenges are that we're talking about are like per person, and then you can do activity sharing challenges now. But the ones that are internal are like groups of, you know, eight or so people challenge each other and make teams, and it's using a third party app that uses the activity rings too. But so that's a weird situation. A couple more things I want to promote this week. I reviewed Vocolink's Flower Bud, which is a HomeKit compatible diffuser, which is it's plastic hardware that you put water and scented oil inside, and then it warms the water and you know, puts out humidity, which is scented, and you can see smoke coming out of the top, and it's like a HomeKit candle almost. It's meant to. It's just like the oil burners that you can buy regularly, but this is when it works with HomeKit, and so you can control it with Siri and the Home app. It's pretty neat. My favorite thing about it is it works with like automation, so you can say, when I get home, run the diffuser for 10 minutes, and then you come home to a nice scent, and then it turns off. And it's got a built-in mood lamp, which appears as a separate light in HomeKit, and it's only like $59, which is, and like smart home technology, you know, seems pretty affordable. Vocolink is a Chinese company, and they kind of specialize in making just like cheap HomeKit accessories or affordable HomeKit accessories. And in this case, like diffuser is a category, and they're the only ones using it, which is pretty neat. So check out the review for that. And then also I wrote about this came inspired by Mac Story's guide to using If This Then That with Siri shortcuts to make things like Sonos and iRobot's Roomba do things with Siri that you couldn't do otherwise. And so with this, I've been able to make the iRobot Roomba vacuum work with Siri commands as if it were HomeKit, and without using something like HomeBridge, where you tell HomeKit that it's a light bulb, but really it's a vacuum. HomeKit should really support robot vacuums as a category. That'd be very nice for like automation and Siri control and scheduling. I've used Alexa for this before, and that's been my primary way of controlling my Roomba vacuum. But what I've done is like recreate the Alexa commands, but with Siri, using If This Then That and Siri shortcuts. And I'm very impressed with like that it's possible. In the setup process, like you need a guide, like I used Mac Story's guide to do it. And then I wrote my own version with my own tips in it. And the other thing is like by using Siri shortcuts, it's the Siri phrases are what you create. Like there's no like wiggle room. And
there's
so
no leniency. Like you can't have natural language queries. You have to be, it's literally direct text matching. Like if you say Roomba room, you have to do Roomba room. You can't say Roomba go into this room. It won't match.
Yeah. And whereas like Siri, as we knew it before, Siri shortcut is there's lots of versions. It can interpret what you're trying to say, or at least it can try. So my solution has been to make two of each command. So there's having the Roomba vacuum, having it pause a cleanup job, having it stop a cleanup job, and then having it go back to its charging base. And so for each of those commands, I've made a short voice command. So Siri start Roomba, Siri stop Roomba, Siri dock Roomba, Siri pause Roomba. But then also the longer but more natural commands like Siri tell Roomba to vacuum, or Siri tell Roomba to go home, which is what Alexa uses. And so then I can, if I slip up, it can probably work. I have found though that I've changed like, is the command tell Roomba to vacuum or tell Roomba to start? And it's start, not vacuum. And so that one word wrong and it doesn't work. So that's like the downside. Plus you've got to, you know, it was really wonky to go through like learning about webhooks and plugging in this, you know, this text. But like once you do it, it works and it's done. But it would be way better if it were HomeKit. But if you've got a Roomba and you want it to work with Siri, I highly recommend checking it out and following.
And to even make the, you know, two variations of phrase, you literally have to duplicate the workflow completely and have two separate items, because it's kind of a hack, right? They don't want you to do this. Apple promotes you making the short phrases because they know that people are going to forget the exact natural language queries they set. So they want short, you know, like catchphrases essentially. But you can do the multiple ones, but you can't have multiple voice phrases per shortcut. You have to literally duplicate the shortcuts and make them independent things.
Yeah, and the benefit for me is with Alexa control, it's anywhere in the home, and it's really nice. But if I'm not home, then you don't have that. And so if I'm not home, or if I just want to use the HomePod or the watch, for example, then I can use Siri. And so it works pretty well. It's not 100%. Like sometimes it just misinterprets or, you know, fails to run, which is disappointing. Like it's not as reliable as just like official support, but it does work and works like most of the time. I'd say like 95% of the time. So I've been impressed. Like the ideal scenario is like I'm out for a run with just my Apple Watch and I've got LTE and I think, you know what? I want to come home to the floor being vacuumed. And I like when there's like lines on the carpet. It's like someone vacuumed. It's like, so I'm on a run, tracking the run, streaming Apple Music. And I'm like, Siri, tell Roomba to vacuum. And I come home and it's already done. Like that's neat. And without having to schedule it and that kind of thing. So, you know, having
and when you set this up first time, you made the shortcuts on the iPad, right?
Yeah.
And you set the voice phrases on the iPad. And then you tried to use it on your phone and it didn't work.
Tried to do it on the watch, yeah. Didn't work.
Yeah, yeah. Which, and obviously the watch relays to the phone.
Right.
Not the iPad.
Yeah.
But because what happens is the shortcuts app will sync your shortcuts, but it doesn't synchronize the voice phrases. So you have to set up the voice phrases on different devices individually, even if the actual shortcuts move across.
Yeah. So it's not hard to duplicate a shortcut, like even if it's on the same device. So that's easy to do, like with the share sheet, duplicate shortcut, give it a new name, you're done. But then you do need to go, even if you've got like just single shortcuts on an iPhone and iPad, record a Siri phrase. And I kind of get why that's the case, but it was surprising. Now, I have noticed recently that when I change the gender voice of my Siri from like any device, it seems to change on every device. And that's not always been the case for me. I don't know about you, but I think
it's meant to have done that for like 4 years, really? But it's unreliable, if you know what I mean. Like,
yeah.
Because I think it was iOS 10 where they said they were now making a Siri ID for you that synchronizes across devices and it stores... It remembers your preferences and it synchronizes if you say the same, a certain phrase three different ways, it can synchronize those translations to all your devices anonymously and privately. And I believe the change in the language was it was part of the iOS 10 package, but it never like worked properly until more recently. I think that's the timeline of that.
Yeah. I have noticed that now I can change the voice on my Mac and all of a sudden it's the same thing on the HomePod, even though they're not connected, and the same thing on the Apple Watch and the iPad. And at one point it was like, it changed the setting, but not the voice yet. And I guess it needed, you know, Wi-Fi to catch up. I didn't even do like the low fidelity voice, but it was just like, it said male voice, but it was doing female voice. So, that's a nice change. But yeah.
John G and Andrew's doing stuff, getting stuff done.
Getting stuff done. Yeah. So the Siri request stuff, like I really like everyone in that room, but now I just want to like go to your house and set this up for you because it is a little bit tricky. But like follow the guide, you can do it, and it's really convenient. It's once you've done it, you know, it's one time and then you're done. So, but long term, robot vacuums should definitely be a HomeKit category. If TVs can be a category, robot vacuums should be a category.
If you can have diffusers as a HomeKit category,
yeah,
vacuums and Hoovers can definitely be a category.
Yeah, yeah. All right, that's the Happy Hour podcast this week. Thanks, everybody, for listening. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Apollo Zach, and Benjamin, you are?
BZA Mayo.
And with that being said, we'll be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.